Okay, welcome back to the program. America Long with you, standing by for Shane Doan, GM of the Canadian men's Olympic team. In the meantime, the news keeps getting worse for the Edmonton Oilers. Stuart Skinner placing COVID-19 protocol. That about 5 minutes ago as announced by the team. So Stuart Skinner, who, listen, didn't have the best of all possible games on Saturday. I think we can all be on the same page about that. But he will not be in net for their next game. That is Thursday, when the Oilers face off against the team that's probably the best team in the NHL right now, and that's the Florida Panthers, a team that is going through teams in the NHL, be it, you know, non-playoff teams like most recently the Columbus Blue Jackets or two-time defending Stanley Cup champions like the Tampa Bay Lightning, going through them like hot knives through butter is the old cliche. So it's about to get tougher for the Edmonton Oilers as now they are down another goaltender. We all know about Mike Smith's injury, this one, the thumb, and the hospital bracelet issues around Mike Smith. Those stories have been well told and well documented, and many still wonder why they signed him to a 2-year contract and a one. Maybe it's to bring down the AAV. I don't know. But he's injured, and now Stu Skinner is in COVID-19 protocol. They'll face off against the Florida Panthers on Thursday, and Mikko Koskinen, Ilya Konovalov, who will be called up from the taxi squad, we all strongly suspect, unless there's a trade for a goaltender from the Oilers, because we keep hearing that missing the playoffs is not an option. And this is a team that was in first place by way of percentage on December 1st. Not first place in the division either. First place in the league. Missing the playoffs, not an option. I know that Ken Holland doesn't want to make a decision on the coach, doesn't want to do anything with the coach. That's never been the way that Ken Holland has done things. And many have pointed out, yes, there was an embarrassment of riches on that Detroit Red Wings team that allowed Ken Holland as a general manager to have the greatest luxury as a GM, and that is patience. When you have arguably the best defenseman that ever played the game in Nick Lidstrom, and you have in Pavel Datsyuk and Henrik Zetterberg, your two best offensive players, who also double as your two best defensive players, therefore and thereby making it impossible to lose any line matchup, as a GM, you can take your time with things. You don't have to rush into anything. We'll see what happens. This is going to be an interesting week for the Edmonton Oilers. Game Thursday against the Panthers, and then Saturday on Hockey Night in Canada, they face off against their traditional rivals, the Calgary Flames. Meanwhile, being joined now by Shane Doan, he is the general manager of the Canadian Men's Olympic Hockey Team, also Arizona Coyotes Chief Hockey Development Officer. Shane, how are you today? Thanks so much for doing this.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Jeff. Appreciate it.
The pleasure is all mine. I know it's a busy time around your office, your household, your life right now. First of all, congratulations on being named general manager. Walk us through, if you could, Shane, what the last couple of weeks have been like for you. I know that there was certainly from NHL corners a disappointment that NHLers won't be going to the Olympics, but this, you know, now thrusts you into a pretty important position. What has your life been like the last couple of weeks?
You know what? I've for the last month and a half, I started with the Channel One. Scotty Salmon and Tom Rennie and Scott Smith, kind of, we were talking, and they mentioned, hey, we should start looking at the Channel One and doing the Spangler, and so we started with that. And so that gives you a pretty good understanding of what's going on in Europe, and so you started looking at players in Europe and that you could take to both those two tournaments. And then from there, when the decision was made that the NHL players weren't going, then it really started buckling down. And Blair McInley, he's been unbelievable at helping out. He kind of sees the whole world and travels around and looks at everything, so he's helped out a bunch. I've been on the phone with those guys a bunch. That's really been the last 2 weeks. Has been on the phones, on Zoom calls with Claude Julien and the coaching staff, and then Scotty Salmon and Blair, and just trying to pick our way through this.
You know, we would look at this, and perhaps it's just a lazy way to look at it, but we'd look at it and say, you know, the majority of this team will probably be made up of players that you were taking to the Channel One Cup. Is that too easy a thing for a radio host to say?
Well, I think that there's obviously, there would be some players that were on that team. There would be some players that would have been on the Spangler team. As you kind of, so the Channel 1 is kind of all the KHL players and a couple other players from maybe the DEL, maybe from the Swedish League. And then the Spangler is probably more players from the Swiss League. And then you'll again get a couple guys from a few other leagues as well. So it's two totally different groups that you want to get a chance to look at. And so, yeah, there's that. And then obviously there'll be some guys from North America, some guys that might have been able that aren't on NHL contracts that are playing here in North America that you get a chance to talk to too.
Yeah, you know, I think this is going to be a really interesting looking team. Like, I'm not asking you to, I know you won't, you know, confirm any of these names, but I mean, we look at Eric Staal, you know, signing a tryout with Iowa. It's like, oh, okay. And nice game winner that he scored in his first game back. That looked really good. And then we, you know, Devin Dubnyk signs with Charlotte and we go, okay, well, that kind of makes some sense there too. And, you know, then I look at some of the younger players, whether it's, you know, Owen Power of Michigan, and there's a lot of talk around there, as you well know. There's Mason McTavish of Hamilton of the OHL, and a lot of talk there. Like, this really is, like, I don't know that it's going to be a demographic as much as it's going to feel like a family picnic with a lot of different age groups on this team. Would that be safe to assume, Shane?
Yeah, that's probably safe to assume. I actually really liked the list that was sent out that kind of got a little bit of legs there that had Freddie B in goal, and I think that they had Danny Heatley on the left side. That was a fun. Yeah. I enjoyed that. That looked like a fun group of guys to go to China with.
That would be fun. We all got a chuckle on that, and Danny Heatley trended briefly on Twitter because of it. So it was always nice to think about Danny Heatley, one of our favorite players, for a couple of moments. Claude Julien, how does it work that Claude Julien becomes the head coach of Team Canada here? Is that something where, you know, you and Scott would approach him? Is that something that, you know, he would call you guys and be proactive and say, hey, listen, if I'm not, you know, back in the National Hockey League, I'd love to be able to do this. How did that process come together?
Well, I think a little bit of both, where it's definitely us approaching him. He didn't call us. Not that he wouldn't have. We probably just didn't give him an opportunity to. We reached out to him as we went through the list of guys that were available, and obviously he's at the top of pretty much every coaching list. So you look at his track record and everything that he's done. That was a kind of a no-brainer. We reached out to him before he might have been calling us, because he's a competitive guy and wants to help and wants to be part of stuff. But when we reached out to him and he said yes, that was kind of the beginning of the end. So you just were like, great, that's perfect. That's who we wanted. That's who we got. So we were really excited about it. So, yeah, that was an absolute, what a man to work with, what a man to just be around and pick his brain, and being able to watch and see the way he handles himself has been one of the real, I guess, benefits of getting to do this job.
Yeah, I have like many people, Shane, I have a lot of time for Claude Julien. And then from a coaching point of view, the one thing we know about Julien is he's a strong structure guy. And I'm always curious about putting these teams together when, you know, grabbing players, like in this case, from a lot of different leagues all over the world, different age groups, and saying, okay, we're going to bring them all together. They're not going to have a lot of time together, but let's try to find some chemistry here. Like, listen, you've been part of a number of world championships. You've been part of the Olympics as well in 2006. I mean, when you start to put together a roster, I mean, the great intangible is what type of chemistry these players are going to have. But if you could describe, like, what are the challenges that Claude Julien faces here trying to get, you know, the most out of these players, you know, who are playing in leagues all over the world?
Well, that is the hardest part, is getting the structure down. And as a country, it's amazing on how, and I don't mean to, we're all Canadians that are probably listening to this, so we really do set the standard for hockey. I mean, you look at what we've done in the last few years at the Olympic level, you look at what we've done at the World Juniors and at the World Championships on men's and women's sides. We do set the standard. And yet it's not just that we have the best players. It's that we have the best players that are willing to put kind of their egos aside. And you will have a guy like Ryan Getzlaff playing on your fourth line, or you'll have Jamie Benn and being willing to do whatever it takes, block shots. And this is a superstar of superstars, but on Team Canada, everyone puts their name aside. It's not about you. It's about the country. We take such pride in it as a country. And so because of that, when your coach says this is the structure we're playing and we have smart players that understand the game, they seem to buy in quickly. And that's going to be what we need, probably as much as anything, is that same willingness to buy in and the same willingness to be, you know, put the team first. And it sounds so cliche-ish, but it's really not about you. No one. Mm-hmm. It's not about anyone. It's about the fact that it's a Maple Leaf and it's Team Canada.
You know, I am curious about some of the young kids as well. And we saw the USA come out with their roster. And listen, there's some kids from that powerhouse Michigan squad. There's some younger players. And I'm curious about young players, recently drafted players. And in this one case, you know, Ron McLean mentioned this sort of in passing. And I think he was kind of joking, but kind of not as well. He was having a conversation on Hockey Night and, you know, talking about Owen Power, and who was, you know, having a really nice couple of games with the World Juniors. And Ron said, Owen Power, heck, why don't you take Connor Bedard as well from Regina, who was lighting it up there, and he's a year away from his draft. Was that even none of us expect Connor Bedard's name to be. Was that even a conversation? Someone like Connor Bedard?
Well, I mean, obviously you see what he did at the World Juniors, and you have to appreciate his skill level and his talent. And, yeah, he's an incredible player, and he's going to be a guy that is so special, and we're all excited to see what his future holds. But that wasn't somebody that was at the top of our list, but it'd be ridiculous not to at least acknowledge how great the World Juniors are and look at all those players that were on that team.
Mm-hmm. What are some of your favorite international moments? I mean, Shane, you've never been shy about answering the call when your country called for hockey. I mentioned the World Championships. You played in six of them. You played in Torino as well. Like, you've represented Canada at a lot of stages of your career when you played. What are the moments that stand out for you, Shane?
You know what? One of the coolest moments, well, the World Cup in Toronto was probably as cool a moment as ever. Driving down, I think we were driving down Bloor, and they stopped traffic, and people are getting out of their cars as the bus goes by. That was one of the coolest moments that I've ever experienced. And then winning in Russia, winning the World Championships in Russia, being in the Olympic Games, being in the village, was Hockey Canada does everything so right. And for all those experiences, they're all incredible, but it's the people that you get to hang out with. Like, I got to be friends with guys that were on the Canadian Olympic team. Like, those are unbelievable hockey players, and I'm as big a fan of them as anybody. And so those are those moments. I got to go one time during the 2010 tryouts. I got to go fishing down the Bow with, like, Sidney Crosby, Scott Niedermayer, Marc-Andre Fleury, Francois Beauchemin. It was like a group of us. And that's the stuff that, because it's Hockey Canada, you get to do stuff that you'd never in a million years get to do. And so the score, the games, they're amazing. The reason you love it so much is that you get to compete against the best players in the world, and it's so much fun. But it's the people that you get to do it with that it's the best part, without a doubt.
Curious about your future here. That's a last question for you. You're a general manager of Team Canada for the Olympics, chief hockey development officer for the Arizona Coyotes. You seem quite comfortable in these positions. I'm curious, is now, you know, for the first time ever in season, there are four teams looking for their next full-time general manager. I mean, opportunities are certainly around. Where do you see your future going in hockey right now? I mean, it's obvious that this is something that, you know, you're interested in, you're good at, you jump in with both feet. What does Shane Doan want to do with this next phase of his career?
You know what? Right now, everything I'm doing is, the focus is between Team Canada and the Coyotes, and trying to help out the Coyotes with what they want me to do here, and they're focusing on finding a way to win the gold. I enjoy this side that I'm getting to do. It's been fun, and like I said, it's the relationships and the people in the future. I don't know. I'm really enjoying what I'm doing right now, so I'm going to keep doing that for the rest of this time and make sure we find a way to win. We'll do everything we can to win over in China, and then the Coyotes, we got lots of work to do here still, so we got to figure that out too. But it's something that I enjoy doing for sure, and I've had a cool opportunity to work with the league and do some different things. So I'm learning everywhere I go, and that's really my only goal, is to try to keep learning.
Well, listen, we wish you the best in all of it, whether it's with Team Canada or the Arizona Coyotes. Shane, it's always a delight catching up with you. Be well, be safe, and good luck in Beijing. And, you know, on behalf of a lot of Canadians, come back with gold. Thanks so much, Shane.
Yeah, that's all we got to do, right? Just come back.
Yeah, it's simple, right? Yeah, it's like a 2-foot putt. Easy. It's layup, right? Easy. It's what Canada does.
Exactly.
Thanks so much for this, Shane. You be well. There he is, Shane Doan, Team Canada Olympic General Manager. That announcement comes on the 24th. USA has already named their team Team Canada. And listen, we do expect to hear Owen Power's name called. Expect to hear Mason McTavish, two young players who were drafted last year. And some, listen, we expect to hear Eric Staal's name called. We expect to hear Devin Dubnyk as well. And if I'm a wagering person, because I think Hockey Canada's is asking four goaltenders, going to take three and leave one behind just in case they need to send for one. Going to write this down. I'm going to tuck it away and see if I'm right. Devin Dubnyk, Devin Levi, Ed Pasquale, Matt Tompkins. That's my best guess. Dubnyk, Pasquale, Levi, Tompkins. That's what I'm guessing. We shall see what happens. All right, coming up, and thanks to Shane Doan for stopping by, and we do wish him the very best. Coming up at the top of hour two, Scott Laughlin, co-host of the Morning Skate. We should probably spend some time and talk about the Florida Panthers, shouldn't we? They are playing really excellent hockey right now. They are a team that when they get the sense that there's some blood in the water, they attack. We always talk about teams that, you know, do they have the killer instinct when it's time to put a team away? And Florida has that, and they're doing it early, and they're doing it to a lot of different teams. And they most recently stuck it to the Columbus Blue Jackets on the weekend. So we'll talk about the Florida Panthers with Scott Laughlin and a lot of other NHL issues there. And then bottom of hour two, Ken Weeb will get us on the Winnipeg Jets page. And I see that Blake Wheeler has returned to skating. So good news on the horizon for the Winnipeg Jets. Thanks so much for joining me. Thanks for listening to Hour 1. Hour 2 is on the horizon. Ken Weeb from Sportsnet, Scott Laughlin from the Morning Skate on NHL Network Radio joins me in a couple of moments. Hour 2 is on the horizon. Jeff Merrick Show, Sportsnet Radio Network. Hour two of the program. In a couple of moments, in Buffalo, Sabres facing off against the Red Wings. On this Martin Luther King Day in the States, we have some NHL games being played, as is tradition. Minnesota Wild facing off against the Colorado Avalanche, that one in a couple of hours. Kings and Sharks, Habs and Coyotes, Blackhawks, Kraken. These are all nicely spread out as well. The Flyers facing off against the Islanders. Preds and Blues should be a good one. Chris Pronger's number, that'll be retired in a ceremony before that game. That should be a really good game. And the Penguins, Golden Knights, that should be a really good game as well. So some good games all the way through the schedule this evening. Scott Laughlin knows that as the co-host of The Morning Show, The Morning Skate on NHL Network Radio and Sirius XM. He joins me now. Scott, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, Jeff. I figure the longer you and I talk, the longer I can put off having to go outside and shovel for a couple hours. I haven't seen anything like this in a couple of decades. I know that much.
There was one I remember when I was young. This would have been around 77 or 78. There was another one that would have been somewhere around, I want to say 98 or maybe 99. That was pretty bad, but I don't know that I've seen highways closed down before, Scott. This is a new one on me.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, you know, it looks pretty bad out front. Then I look out of my back deck, and there's about 2.5 feet of snow on the back deck too. So I'm kind of afraid even to set foot on the deck. I'm hoping it's going to hold. I know I've put on a couple of LBs here, Jeff, during the course of the pandemic. So I hope it works out well for me this afternoon.
I'm on shoveling. My next one will be shoveling number 3 so far, and I haven't touched the back yet. So I'm going to need the back pain medication at some point later on today.
Yeah.
We got a scattered game today, which is real nice. And Buffalo and Detroit are poised to drop the puck here in a couple of moments. Wild and Avs, Kings, Sharks, nicely spread out too. So once you're done your shoveling, you have a full buffet, Scott, of hockey in front of you. Before we get into that, I want to talk to you about the Florida Panthers here specifically. But you look at some of the games going around this afternoon and this evening. Does anything specific jump out to you? I mean, I can't wait to see Minnesota, Colorado. That's the one that I've got circled here in a couple of hours. What's spicing your chili today?
Well, I like the Preds and Blues tonight just because maybe they're fighting for second spot when it's all said and done in the Central Division. And I think that both teams show us that they could be and probably should be playoff teams when it's all said and done. And everybody probably fighting for second because Colorado's starting to roll right now, as we know. And I also like, as you mentioned, that Pittsburgh-Vegas game tonight kind of stands out to me too, because Pittsburgh, I know they went to overtime at the Shark Tank a couple of nights ago and got that great feed and the setup for Sidney Crosby to pass the puck to win it for the Pittsburgh Penguins. But, you know, Vegas is Vegas, and they're first in the Pacific, and there are some great stories. But, you know, like in the Central, where Colorado has asserted its dominance, I think, the past couple of weeks, I think Vegas has done that the past month or so, and we think that they're even going to get stronger when Jack Eichel walks through that door, eventually being their top-line centerman.
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to an agent about this on Sunday morning, who said, what are you hearing about Jack Eichel here? And, you know, I was like, what I'm hearing is sometime after All-Star. I don't think we're expecting Eichel any time before that. Do you think we're guilty of forgetting how good Jack Eichel is just because he's been out of sight for so long?
Yeah, I think that could be the case, Jeff. And let's face it, too. I mean, if this was an Olympic year where the NHLers were actually participating, I think we would have been focused more on Jack Eichel, right? Can he get back?
Can he be
healthy and productive for the Golden Knights? Can he play for USA Hockey in Beijing? Same sort of thing maybe for Carey Price, too. We talk about out of sight, out of mind, and I realize that there's a lot going on with the Carey Price situation, not only physically, but having entered, you know, the Players Assistance Program a couple of months ago and things he's got to work out to feel right to get back onto the ice. And he was going to be given all the time he needed to do that. You just wonder, though, had the NHLers been going to the Olympics, would there have been more of a push on for Carey to maybe ramp it up and to get out there sooner rather than later? Instead, he's looking at his team right now being right down at the bottom of the NHL standings, and they've got a game against the Coyotes today. May the worst team win, perhaps, Jeff, as they get into the Shane Wright sweepstakes. And I know Logan Cooley is kind of zooming up the charts a little bit, too, from the NDDP, et cetera. But, you know, I think this sheds a different light on the situation. Just because there was not that timeline now to work from, where you're working up against that timeline, where you had to get out there and show your wares to see if you could participate in the Olympics, now players like Eichel and Carey Price perhaps could take that extra time that they need to get ready. And you're right. I mean, Jack Eichel is a $10 million a year player for a reason. And I think that we have, with him going to Vegas, forgotten how good he can be. We also know how good Vegas is without him. And I think that's where it's very much intriguing, right? And whereas we say Chandler Stephenson's done yeoman's work to be that top-line centerman that they've needed, we think ultimately Jack Eichel, with what they gave up to get him and knowing how much he's going to get paid for the number of years to come on the contract, we think he'll be that top-line pivot. So I can't wait to see him back, whether it's against Buffalo in early February or sometime after that. I'm looking forward to seeing what he's got to show for that great hockey team out there.
And I think we're all trying to figure out how the Vegas Golden Knights are going to do this and make this work for their salary cap. Like, I'm working, Scott, and I'm curious what you think on this one. I'm working under the theory that they're going to go out and, you know, maybe there's been sort of an understanding already between Vegas and Buffalo on this one. Like, I think they're going to go out there and buy LTIR contracts or trade for LTIR contracts. Like, I wonder if Vegas has some Johnny Boychuk contract coming their direction. I wonder if that's the route they go to get Jack Eichel in here. I don't know. Are you working with any particular theory on how Kelly McCrimmon's going to make this work?
Yeah, that's been something that's been floated out there, Jeff, and I think that's going to be a possibility for them. We've also heard the names Raleigh Smith and Wild Bill Carlson, right, come up here in terms of, you know, what they've got on the contract and can they find a taker to shed some salary that way. So, look, I think they'd like to hold on to both of those guys ultimately. And, you know, we know what Smith means on that second line and what he has meant for so many years now with the chemistry on that team. And, you know, Wild Bill might not be the 43-goal scorer that he was coming over from Columbus, but he's still a very valuable piece of that puzzle there in Vegas. So your option might be the best one right now if they can go and make that work. And, you know, you can take on that money that you can just put into LTIR and free up some that way. We'll have to wait and see. I mean, it's at least short term, Jeff. I think it's a case of the rich getting richer. Over the long haul, I mean, at some point, this is going to catch up to the Vegas Golden Knights. We know that to be true. The cupboards aren't exactly stocked any longer, but this has been a team that from its birth has been in win-now mode, and there's no better time, as far as they're concerned, to win the Stanley Cup in 2022.
You know, one thing, Scott, that you said on your show today that really caught me, and I'm like, oh, yeah, we really should be making a bigger deal about this. Keith Yandle is a handful of games away from tying Doug Jarvis, the Iron Man streak. And I know that Philadelphia is not having a season to write home about, quite the opposite, and there's some big decisions on the horizon for the Philadelphia Flyers, specifically coming from ownership, Comcast. But Yandle's five games away from this Iron Man streak. That, how many times have you heard, no one's catching Doug Jarvis? No one's ever going to catch Doug Jarvis. And the impressive thing about it is, and I don't want to jinx any of it, I really did think that, you know, COVID is going to catch everybody. And so far it hasn't with Keith Yandle, because that would be an awful way to end this streak. But so far, so good for Yandle.
Well, that was something I hadn't even really thought about until I watched the Ducks broadcast one night a week or two ago, Jeff, and Brian Hayward and John Ahlers talked about it on the Ducks broadcast and mentioned COVID. I'm like, yeah, I never even thought about that with Keith Yandle, because so many guys are entering COVID-19 protocols these days. Man, I hope that doesn't happen. And that's how the streak comes to an end. You know, it's phenomenal. You know, Keith Yandle obviously is not the most physical defenseman out there, but he is playing defense, and you do take a pounding. You know, it is a very, very demanding position to play, even in today's day and age, which is a far cry from, you know, 20, 25 years ago, when guys like Raymond Bourque and Paul Coffey used to run right through the end boards by the opposition, in on the forecheck, dump the puck in their corner as much as you can, try to wear them down as the night goes on. I still think it's very, very impressive for what he's done. I know Phil Kessel's right behind him. Phil is playing wing, and he's the type of guy that is going to probably go past Doug Jarvis as well, but it's the first of the party to get celebrated, and I think that's going to be Keith Yandle. And you're right, Jeff. I mean, I can't believe this is not being trumped up a little bit more at this point, because, you know, when I was a kid, and you would remember this too, I mean, hey, Gary Unger's the Iron Man, right?
Yes, well, Gary Unger.
Greg Ramsey. Craig Ramsey's got this consecutive game streak going on, and Doug Jarvis ends up with the record, and it is something, I think, and former players will tell you this. It is something to be a guy that can be counted upon each and every night, that when the coach goes out to fill out the game sheet, that first name he puts down has got to be Keith Yandle. Doesn't matter where he played, whether it's Coyotes, Panthers, Flyers, whatever the case may be, you write his name down. There is something to be said about being available to your team each and every night. I don't think it's anything that can be overlooked, and I think when you play the position that Keith Yandle plays, I think it's something that deserves to be celebrated, and this needs to be talked about more and more, because this is going to be an historic mark, hopefully, fingers crossed, when he gets there.
Another thing of particular note tonight, and I keep pushing off this Panthers conversation, but we are going to have it. Chris Pronger, his number gets retired tonight by the St. Louis Blues. Number 44 goes to the rafters. I was making this point with Friedman in the first hour. You know, that last era of hockey, you can look at and say that was the golden age of the netminder. It's Dominic Hasek, and it's Martin Brodeur, and it's Patrick Roy, and it's Ed Belfour. I still submit, too, it was also a golden age for some of the most elite defensemen we've ever seen. And it's a lot of it's dominated by Nick Lidstrom. But then it's also Scott Niedermeyer, and it's also Chris Pronger, who's in that conversation as well. When I say his name, what do you think, Scott? Chris Pronger.
First word that comes to mind, Jeff, is nasty, right? Like edgy, nasty, chippy, dirty when he had to be. The type of guy that got booed in every building that he went into except for his own home rink. And I think in talking with Chris, and you've talked with him many times over the years too, he wore this sort of as a badge of honor, right? The fact that he could go into every rink, and if he was an opposing player, he would get booed each and every time he touched the puck. Nobody liked him except for the home crowd, and that's because he could be nasty and he could be edgy. And, you know, here's a guy that could contribute offensively and still have that sort of physical component, that intimidation factor, that stay-at-home leadership quality as well, too, that you know, you didn't find in many, many players. And there was a reason why he went where he went in the draft. And, you know, Berkey and the Hartford Whalers making that pick. And, look, I always say in defense of Alexandre Daigle that everybody and their mothers and brothers and sisters and aunts would have had Alexandre Daigle as the top pick in the draft. The Ottawa Senators made the pick that everybody else on the planet would have made back then, because you remember how lights-out good he was at Victoria in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League.
Oh.
He was fast. He was skilled. Like, this was the obvious choice. It was put on a tee for the Ottawa Senators. They made the obvious selection. But after that, you know, Chris Pronger, as it turns out, after going through some growing pains in Hartford to start his career, really seemed to hit stride. And again, when you can talk about a defenseman being a Hart Trophy winner and to have that presence that he had, to do it internationally for Canada, to do it, of course, in the NHL for so long, every team he joined seemed to get better and always seemed to be in Stanley Cup contention. And of course, the Ducks Stanley Cup back in 2007 with the big three on the blue line leading the way. The guy was a serial winner. Any way you want to slice it, if you were an opposing player or a fan of the opposing team, you hated this guy with a passion, but he could be chippy, edgy, and he could be very, very effective. The type of guy that you certainly wanted on your side, and the type of guy that is just synonymous with all kinds of success.
You know, that's interesting about you know, Pronger and Hartford and Brian Brooks. I remember having a conversation with Berkey a few years ago about that draft specifically. And as we all know, Brian Burke loves Chris Pronger.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that they had him number one. And I said, well, who else was in consideration for you guys for number one as well? He said it was mainly Pronger. And guess who number two was? And they went back and forth on this guy for number one. And it wasn't Alexandre Daigle.
I'm drawing a blank, Jeff. Fill me in.
Paul Kariya.
Wow,
Paul Kariya,
Maine Black Bears. That's right.
And you know, and he had like remarkable seasons for Maine.
Mm-hmm.
But the concern was, and you can recall back at the time, was the size for Kariya. So we went to Pronger because we were concerned about Korea's size and the NHL. Okay, Florida Panthers. Is there a better team in the NHL today, right now, at this moment, Scott Laughlin?
No, there's not. There's not, Jeff. And look, for the longest time, and I said it earlier today, Jeff, on our program, I mean, you know, you talk about the team with the most points, and then everybody always has to follow it up with, oh, yeah, but the team with the best winning percentage is so-and-so, and that team might be as far down as, like, fourth. And that's because teams have had games postponed, and a lot of teams have a bunch of games to make up, and so on and so forth. The top team in the league points-wise and winning percentage-wise now, the Florida Panthers. 16 goals in a two-game span. They're 30 goals scored better than they were last year at this time of the season, some 38 games into their campaign. They're 21-3 on home ice. The goaltending has been excellent, led by a resurgence from Sergei Bobrovsky, who looks a heck of a lot like the guy, Jeff, that we used to watch star and steal games for the Columbus Blue Jackets way back when. You've got Ekblad when he's been healthy. He's been lights out good. Norris Trophy consideration, no doubt, for Ekblad when it's all said and done. And scoring depth. I mean, this is a very, very deep team. You know, the unheralded superstars in Huberdeau and Barkov are leading the way, of course, but, you know, the Sam Bennett's and the Sam Reinhart's of the world, the Anthony Duclair's, even a depth guy like the Lamborghini, as we want to call him, Ryan Lomberg, has been chipping in his own peculiar way. It's hard really to think of anybody with the Florida Panthers right now, Jeff, that is not enjoying a good season or a great season or even a breakout season in terms of some of the kids that they've got on the roster there. So, no, this is the best team in hockey right now. The only downside of what I've seen from the Panthers so far comes in their scheduling, Jeff, and some of that's out of their hands, right? They've played 10 more home games than they have on the road. So during the second half of the season, the road games may catch up to them to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to even that thing out as we go forward here, and maybe that's where teams like Tampa Bay and the Leafs, maybe even the Boston Bruins, dare we say, maybe that's where they can make some headway and make up some of the stagger. The Florida Panthers have got to play a lot in the road the second half, but I've seen nothing that will tell me that this team can't get it done, because every facet of the game they've got going for them. And again, when we talk about Florida and South Florida, we've often talked in years gone by about a fire to put out and about how there are no butts in the seats and how the team should be moved and that sort of thing. That's really starting to change now. It seems like it has become a home ice advantage. It seems like the fans have gotten on board. You've got them scoring 9 goals per night some nights, so that'll bring the fans out, and they'll be chanting, "We want 10, we want 10," as they did against the Columbus Blue Jackets. But everything is coming up roses right now for the Panthers and Andrew Brunette, a guy that I think you and I agree would not only be there the rest of this season, but he just might work his way into the equation as far as the long-term answer behind the bench goes in South Florida.
And don't you think, Scott, he'd have to work himself into the Jack Adams equation as well through all of this? Like, this is we all remember it's a very difficult situation, the removal of Joel Quenneville. Andrew Brunette comes in on an interim capacity, and we all said, okay, those are huge shoes Andrew Brunette is walking into as a rookie head coach in the NHL. Scott, what more does he have to do to get the interim tag taken off? Like, what more can Andrew Brunette deliver here in his first campaign, his first go-around in the NHL as a full-time head coach? I'm at a loss for it. Like, what more does he have to show?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And you mentioned it earlier too, Jeff, today with us, that, you know, Mike Sullivan certainly seems to be the odds-on favorite. And everybody says, if I had a vote for the Jack Adams, it'd be Mike Sullivan. And I think Mike would be right there. I think that Andrew Brunette should be right there. I would also once again look at Rod Brind'Amour. I know he won last year, but I think you could make the case that he's deserving of that type of honor again as we approach the halfway point with a lot of ground to cover the rest of the way as well. And, you know, I think not to be overlooked, I think a guy like John Hines with the Nashville Predators, too, he deserves to be in the mix, too, with the job that he's done for a Predators team that, quite frankly, you know, I thought would be a team that would be in the mix to make the playoffs, but I'm not sure I was even on record back in September as we were waiting for this thing to get started as saying, hey, the Predators are a team that's a team that will be in the playoffs. And, you know, David Poile comes out and talks about a competitive rebuild. This Predators team has been a lot more competitive, a lot more than anybody could have expected. And I think that John Hines also deserves some consideration for the Jack Adams based upon the great job he's done again down there.
Yeah, you know what, let's pause on Nashville here for a second, because you bring up a really good point, too, not just of Hines, but of David Poile and the Nashville Predators. We thought that, okay, this is going to be bodies out the door. This will be the last year. Philip Forsberg is going to fetch a big return. You know, they had their moment last year where UC Saros willed them into the playoffs. But then, okay, the Ryan Ellis trade happens, and you start to say to yourself, okay, who's next? You know, which players are they firing out the door here? And all of a sudden, you know, Roman Josi is having a Norris Trophy type campaign. All of a sudden, you know, Matt Duchene has been rejuvenated. There's more ice time for Ile Tolvanen. They have found money in this rookie, Tanner Jeannot, who every time I'd check with Tim Hunter and Moose Jaw, he'd say, you got to see this Jeannot kid who's like smashing athletic and strength records here in junior hockey. How are they doing this? Like, I look at it and I say it might be too easy just to say, well, it's UC Saros, because it's got to be more than that. And listen, Saros has been fantastic, and he's in the Vezina conversation there with, you know, Vasilevsky and Igor Shesterkin. But how have the Nashville Predators been able to turn this around? And do you have a thought on the decision with Philip Forsberg?
Well, I think some of the guys you pointed out deserve a lot of credit, right? Aside from just the obvious and UC Saros, Roman Josi, look, I mean, every year I guess we could say he should be a Norris Trophy candidate at the very least. Tanner Jeannot has been, you know, a revelation, you know, to me at least. Anyway, Jeff, I know you had much more of a background on him than I did, but, you know, he's produced some numbers. He can be really physical when he needs to be. That's for sure. He's proven that. Even a guy like Yakov Trenin, right, just as a role player he's turned out to be. Trenin was the guy who fought, you know, yes. Big Z's at Enochara twice. He fought him a couple of years ago and buckled Big Z, and then they fought again earlier this season as well, as Chara stood up for one of his teammates with the New York Islanders. And again, you know, Matt Duchene deserves a lot of credit. And I've said this before. We criticized him a lot because he's making $8 million and he wasn't delivering the goods as far as what the contract would say he needs to produce. But when a guy's playing as well as he has this season, give him a lot of credit because he's been key to the resurgence. I think ultimately still Philip Forsberg is their most talented forward. I've always believed that. And I know that he didn't grow up and wasn't a homegrown Predators prospect per se, but he pretty much maybe should have been anyway, because he was picked up as a young prospect in the Marty Erat deal with George McPhee and the Capitals, as we all know, as George probably gets reminded of about 100 times per week as his career's gone on. I would do everything I could to move heck and high water to sign Philip Forsberg. How they do that? Well, that's up to David Poile to figure that out. You'd have to think that Forsberg's not coming for anything cheaper than $8 million per, because that's what Johansson makes, and that's what the aforementioned Duchene makes. And if I'm Forsberg, look, if I don't get it from you, I'll get it from somebody else. I just think that they've got to do whatever they can do to keep Philip Forsberg in-house, because I've always looked at him as the guy who's most talented up front for the Nashville Predators, and I'd hate to see them kind of, you know, grow him over the years, and I know they picked him up in the trade with the Caps, but see him kind of walk out the door at the height of his powers, just still being that most talented guy up front for Nashville.
He's the most skilled forward they have, like, full stop. Mm-hmm. Like, with all due respect to Matt Duchene, with all due respect to, you know, Ryan Johansson, he is the most skilled forward this team has.
Absolutely.
Period. Like, Roman Josi's skill is, you know, next level as far as blue liners go. But mm-hmm. when it comes to skill up front, no one's Philip Forsberg. Speaking of skill, there are two of the best players in the world playing on the Edmonton Oilers, yet they still can't get the car out of the garage. Case in point, Saturday, not just the game, but the Connor McDavid press conference, which we've all talked about afterwards, as he searches for answers. There's not an obvious one that he wants to share, although, as we spoke about on your show this morning, like, players know what the problem is. Players know. Players, you know, you ask anyone on that Oilers team, they'll say, you know, we need a save. It all starts with starting to get saves. And now Stuart Skinner's on the COVID-19 protocol list. The next game for the Oilers is Thursday. And, oh, look who they're facing off against, the Florida Panthers, Scott. And then they have Calgary and Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday. Long and short here, it's not getting any easier for Edmonton. How do you see this thing playing out? What are your thoughts on Edmonton right now?
Boy, it's ugly, right? And as you say, McDavid after the game Saturday night just was at a loss for words as to how to explain what's happened to his team, as the bottom has completely fallen out. And look, I mean, Kenny Holland's a Hall of Fame general manager for a reason. But I would have gone out and tried to address the goaltending yesterday. And people say, well, it's easy for you to say. Well, I mean, his job is to uncover every stone possible in trying to upgrade that goaltending position, because I don't care what you say or what they say, Jeff. You know, these greasy, leaky goals and inconsistent goaltending at best, and maybe that's putting it politely, it just is a bench killer. It's got to be a dressing room killer for the Edmonton Oilers to know that they're going to start. And quite frankly, if they've got the lead, they probably can't protect it, as they proved on Saturday. Or they're going to be fighting from behind. And we know, surprisingly, when this team trails after 20 minutes this season, even with 97 and 29, they still can't come from behind to win very often, if at all. So, you know, they're fighting an uphill battle before they even take the ice. And whether it's Skinner or Koskinen or even Mike Smith, there are just too many question marks out there. And I think it's incumbent on Ken Holland, this is a recording, to go out and get somebody, anybody. If you want to swing for the fences, Marc-Andre Fleury maybe might be the guy you go after. If you want to perhaps set your sights a little bit lower, maybe a Georgiev perhaps. You go to the Rangers and see what they're going to ask for Georgiev. And even then, I'm not sure the Rangers want to mess with that great 1-2 punch that they've got. But I guess if you put enough sweetener in there, you could make something work. I just don't know that you can depend on what they've got. And that includes Mike Smith. Great season last season once he got healthy enough to play. But he's 39 going on 40. He can't seem to start more than three straight games before he gets hurt again. And so if you're a player in that room, I kind of think you're waiting for the Hall of Fame general manager to go out and help you out. like throw them a life preserver at this point. Go get somebody, anybody, who can be an upgrade on the position. It's easier said than done, like I said, because you've got the Koskinen contract, and we know that the dollar figure, with that is very difficult to move. We know that Stuart Skinner is relatively unproven, still might be a guy down the road, but right now when this team needs somebody night in and night out to give it to them, they can't depend on him either. And Mike Smith can't stay healthy, 39 going on 40. So I would have gone out and addressed that yesterday. I think it's a source of frustration for the Edmonton Oilers. And, you know, further to that, Jeff, we talked about the great depth that the Oilers had when they got off to a 15-5, 16-5 start to the season. Now all of a sudden that depth has once again been a question mark. And beyond the top two lines, you're not quite sure what you're going to get. And, you know, a week from now, are we talking about the Evander Kane thing coming to fruition? There's a whole lot going on out there. And, you know, the most interesting team in the league right now might be the Edmonton Oilers. And, Jeff, I would suggest it's probably for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, you know, and I think what burns at Edmonton right now is they know they need to address the goaltending issue, but there's no chance that they get out of this without overpaying for a goaltender if they're going to go get one. No one's about to do the Edmonton Oilers any favors.
Sure.
But you know what, Scott? I've maintained for the longest time now, they've been playing catch-up for a long time, and the one thing that really hurt Edmonton, like there was a lot of discussion about the Taylor Hall, Adam Larson deal, and I know that Hall went on to win the Hart Trophy and had a spectacular time with the New Jersey Devils, and that trade, you know, they didn't maximize a return on Taylor Hall, but they got a really good player. Like at least Adam Larson was a really good player and really contributed to that team and was a valuable member of that blue line. You know what, Scott? The more you go back and look at it, the one place where they really messed up, and they're still paying for it to this day by way of depth, is the Griffin-Reinhart deal. For pick number 16, and was it 16 and 33 or 16 and 32?
Mm-hmm.
And I know at that spot, you know, people around the organization have told me, you know, if they would have held on to the pick, they would have taken Joel Eriksson-Ek. You know, that goes to address a lot of the issues that Edmonton still has to this day, and that player would be coming right into the sweet spot of their career right now. I honestly, Scott, I still, and then they got a player that played his way out of Edmonton. I still think that Edmonton's paying for that trade still to this day. Agree or disagree? We'll end on that one.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Jeff. And it just goes to show, like, if you don't hit in the draft, and especially when you're talking about picks, and I guess maybe it started for Reinhart. He was an Islanders draft pick, was he not?
Yes,
I think
he was,
what, fourth overall, if I'm not mistaken, off the top of my head, something like that.
High pick for the Kings.
Yeah, exactly. And he looked like he was going to be a player, and certainly they erred, and then the trade was made and such as well. And look, Edmonton, it just seems like, has been chasing this goaltending situation for the longest time now. And, you know, you just wonder how it's going to get better, because I agree with you too, Jeff. I mean, if he's going to go out there, he's going to have to overpay for somebody, because everybody in the league knows that Edmonton needs goaltending help. Another guy, maybe. I mean, Braden Holtby, Anton Hudobin. Dallas has got the three-headed monster, I guess, right now, and not the four-headed monster. Things a little bit clearer, but maybe they could afford to move a goaltender out, and maybe that would be an upgrade for the Edmonton Oilers. I don't know, but this is a real, real tough situation to see it transpire this way. And when you think what McDavid and Draisaitl are doing once again this season, I know McDavid's been human the last 13 games, and he's been a point-per-game guy the last 13 games or so, and Draisaitl's kind of cooled off as far as he goes, but he's still tied for the league leading points and goals. It would be a shame to see this, you know, come apart at the seams any further than it has already. And, you know, as you said earlier this morning, as has been repeated time and time again, it's something I agree with. Losing this season and missing the playoffs this season at Edmonton is not even in the realm of possibility, or else I think that anything could be on the table, and that wouldn't bode well for the changes out there in Alberta.
I like how you said that. He's only a point a game now. Like, only about Connor McDavid.
Yes, he bleeds.
That's awesome. Scotty, you're always generous with your time. Really appreciate it, pal. Keep up the great work. We'll catch up real soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
There he is, Scott Laughlin, joining me from NHL Network Radio, co-host of The Morning Skate, alongside Gord Stellick. There's a whole lot there. Yeah, eyes on Edmonton big time this week. And if you missed the latest news coming out of Edmonton, netminder Stuart Skinner, who we saw Saturday against the Edmonton Oilers, has been placed in COVID-19 protocol. So he's out. Mike Smith is out with the injury. And here we go again. Like, once again, the Edmonton Oilers, as they're desperate for wins, turn to Mikko Koskinen as he'll face off against the Florida Panthers on Thursday. Buckle up. We'll turn our attention to the Winnipeg Jets here. Ken Weeb from Sportsnet will be joining us in a couple of moments. Blake Wheeler back on the ice for the Winnipeg Jets. Haven't played a whole lot of hockey lately, and that's about to change. We'll get the latest from Ken Weeb on Paul Maurice's former team. We'll see what life without Pimo is like in Manitoba. Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to the program. Jeff Merrick along with you here Monday to Friday, starting at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific. Thanks so much for joining me on the program. Ken Weeb from Sportsnet.ca and co-host of the Kenny and Rennie Show joining me now to talk about all things Winnipeg Jets. How are you doing today, Ken?
Jeff, I'm doing excellent. Thanks for asking. How about yourself?
I'm doing well, and I know that everybody in Manitoba is probably laughing at us in Ontario right now as we complain about snow. True or false?
True. Have the real question is, have they called in the military yet?
No, that was the late former mayor Mel Lastman. But I'll tell you what, I don't know. I've never seen a time where they've shut down highways, but they've shut down highways in Toronto for the first time in, you know, my 52 years on this earth. What do you think about that one, Ken?
Well, safety first, right? If the pandemic has taught us anything, safety first, better to be staying home, staying safe. We promise not to make too much fun of the folks out east. I did enjoy 3 months living in Toronto. I remembered folks, you know, with one of your old buddies, Bobby Makowicz, when he was the producer at OTR there. So back in the good old days when I was an intern at the other shop there. So I remember folks didn't enjoy driving when there was rain, let alone snow. So that was a good eye opener for me.
It's been a challenging day for us here. Okay, how's life been without Paul Maurice?
It's interesting, for sure. Obviously, certainly enjoy the banter with Paul over the years. You know, he did a very good job for those 8 seasons. But, you know, new sheriff in town. I think Dave Lowry has done a nice job here, for sure. Definitely not as loquacious at the mic, if you will. But Dave's done a really nice job with what he's done in this, you know, the 1 month anniversary today, obviously. Not a lot of coaches can say they've only coached 6 games in their first month.
Yeah.
At the same time, but no, there's been a lot of practice time, and the Jets are about to get really busy. And you know, as you know, it's a bit of a pretty daunting schedule for them coming up this week with 4 games against some of the league's best opponents. But 4-2 record so far, and in some regards, it's tough to even say the first game under Lowry was under Lowry's watch, considering that the resignation happened the morning of the game against the Washington Capitals. So that's an interesting tie-in going into tomorrow's action.
I was going to say, is there any appreciable difference you can tell between Dave Lowry and Paul Maurice? Anything different by way of how Winnipeg is playing, or is it just flat out still too early to tell any major differences here?
Yeah, I mean, structurally, I think the Jets kind of got back to trying to be a little bit more aggressive in all 3 zones. But, I mean, that was kind of their original premise under Paul this year going into the year. So they just weren't able to maybe execute as well on that front. You know, not a lot of X's and O differences. But, I mean, obviously the Jets just got through the COVID crisis with 8 guys on the protocols last game against the Detroit Red Wings. But the biggest thing, their special teams have been better. I mean, especially the penalty kill, which was a disaster early on. Has been a lot better under Lowry. But structurally, they're doing a better job of getting to the blue paint, getting to the net, getting to the quote-unquote dirtier areas to score goals. We know the Jets have been historically a rush team, given a lot of the firepower up front. But they've done a better job of getting to the net, crossing the net, and being rewarded with some goals around there. But and their defending has been solid. But again, everything kind of starts with Connor Hellebuyck when it comes to the Jets. And, you know, their defense corps had a nice boost from a couple of young kids, given their COVID woes, with 4 guys out of the lineup, with Dylan Sandberg and Declan Chisholm both making their debuts on Thursday against the Red Wings. Sandberg playing almost those 18 minutes, including 4 on the penalty kill. And Chisholm, I know, a guy that you like out of the Peterborough program there. I mean, yeah. A little bit of one of those kind of late round gems, you know, such a mobile skater, and his ability to you know, get the puck from the boards to create shooting lanes. I mean, he had 4 shots on goal and 9 attempts. Like, not a lot of young players making their debut have the confidence to get 9 shots off in that first game, let alone, 9 pretty solid attempts. And I thought, Declan's a guy that I watched a bit with the Moose the last couple of years. And to me, he has some Jay Bouwmeester in him in terms of how he's going to defend at the NHL level with his feet and his stick positioning and body positioning, even though he's not necessarily going to be a physical guy. His mobility is such a strength, and man, Sandberg's a big, strong, I know you watch him at the World Juniors a lot. He's a big, strong guy, but also mobile. And he has a little bit of that Jacob Trouba snarl in his game. You didn't necessarily see it. You saw one hit in the opener, but he's the kind of guy that plays with some edge. And those two guys are certainly going to keep things interesting. And, you know, the other thing about Jets fans, they've been waiting for Ville Heinola, but they had to wait a little bit longer because he ended up on that COVID list as well.
Hey, you know, true or false, I was always told that it was management's, management wanted Paul to play Ville Heinola a lot more than he did. They're not saying that, you know, Cheveldayoff was trying to shove him down Paul Maurice's throat, but it was very much their desire, rather, that he got more ice time. Is that accurate in your estimation?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the theory and know that that narrative is out there a little bit, Jeff. I mean, again, it's just so interesting because when Heinola, when he broke in as an 18-year-old, you know, there were a couple of nights out of necessity where he played 20 minutes. So, I mean, yes, a lot of those times can go well, but then you also don't see the warts. That's the other thing with young players. I mean, everyone's ready to hand over the jobs right away, but Heinola has done a great job in terms of his development, and obviously just terrible timing for him. He would have been in the lineup finally, and I think that he is still going to get some time with the Jets this year, but to be honest, I think they're fine with him being able to marinate. I mean, you know, much like the Detroit Red Wings approach in their heyday, I mean, they'd rather have him over ready than under ready and kind of thrown into the fire. But I mean, I understand why. I mean, some folks on the asset management side are not comfortable with the Jets having played guys on UFA deals, 1-year contracts, when you could have been getting that experience for Heinola. So I understand both sides of the equation. We know his offensive game is ready. We know he's worked on his defensive, acumen on the back end based on how Eric Dubois has spoken about his play this year. But I think it's just a matter of if and not when. But I mean, it's interesting. The Jets went out and got 2 guys that were under contract for 3 and 4 years respectively. So, you know, without a trade, there isn't a lot of opportunity for guys, whether it be Heinola, Sandberg, or Chisholm, for that matter, outside of the COVID or injury situation. So the Jets are in a really interesting spot when it comes to their back end long term, because it's sort of gone from a weakness to a strength kind of overnight, if you will. But there's not a lot of room for, you know, it's nice to be able to go 9 or 10 deep, but you can only dress 6 a night most nights. So it's going to be interesting to see how they approach the upcoming trade deadline. And it might be more an off-season type of transaction, but they're going to have to incorporate, as you know, I mean, with Pierre-Luc Dubois needing a new deal and Andrew Kopp and Paul Stastny is pending UFAs, they're going to need to incorporate those ELC guys next year that have lower salaries so they can make it work and make it fit.
What do you think Cheveldayoff does around trade deadline time this season as trade chatter is now starting to heat up? You know, last year around trade deadline, they were, you know, trying to get Jamie Oleksiak, for example, out of the Dallas Stars organization. What do you see Cheveldayoff doing this time around?
Yeah, I see more like kind of depth forward scenarios, Jeff, to be honest. But they have some internal candidates, you know, that David Gustafson's been hurt, but he's a guy that can probably step into that fourth line role pretty quickly here once he gets healthy. And because of the found money and Evgeny Svechnikov, they do have some depth, but, you know, they've had now Christian Reichel step into the lineup. But they're in a dollar-for-dollar scenario. I mean, with them being deep into LTIR already, I could see a scenario where one of those D-men get moved, but, I mean, the Jets are still kind of in win-now mode, and unless they fall out of it, I sort of see them keeping Andrew Kopp as a self-rental the same way they did with Brandon Tanev, Tyler Myers, and Ben Sherrod in that 2018 run when they went out and got Stastny the first time. So they're going to be interesting to watch, but again, it all depends on how we expect the Jets to stay in it. I don't see them falling out of it or having to sell off assets, and they got to be, you know, cognitive of the money not only today but in moving forward because of those. They don't have a ton of RFAs and UFAs, but the guys they have are guys that are going to command a significant raise going into next year. So they'll be one of the more fascinating teams to watch for me, Jeff. But I don't have a great indication otherwise outside of adding forward depth. I mean, and also too, Blake Wheeler back on the ice today with his teammates for the first time. that will certainly help their cause. But yeah, there aren't a lot of openings on the Jets, to be honest. But I think they'd like to maybe get a little bit of a, you know, kind of like a Pat Maroon type to maybe play on that third line with Adam Lowry. I could see that being, you know, on the agenda. But because of how Svechnikov has played, now he's out of the lineup with a lower body injury in his day-to-day, or upper body, pardon me. But they don't have a lot of room to make room for guys, and they've got a couple guys knocking on the door. So I don't have a great answer for you, but I'm fascinated to see which way it goes.
I see Blake Wheeler's back on the ice. So good news on the horizon for Winnipeg here?
Yeah, you know what? He moved really well. I mean, obviously he played his best game of the year on December 10th against the Vancouver Canucks, scoring his first goal, and he had a three-point night and was buzzing around before he got tangled up with Vasilij Podkolzin in front of the Jets net there. But moving around well, looked like his knee injury is healing. I don't know exactly. Dave Lowry wasn't sure exactly when or if he'd be an option on this four-game road trip, but the fact he was out with his teammates and moving around pretty well is a good sign for him. But that'll be another thing. Where does he slot in? I mean, we know that the relationship between Blake Wheeler and Paul Maurice was incredibly strong. We expect, you know, similar. But, I mean, the one thing under Lowry, I mean, going back to your original question, is there has been opportunity, and he made a point of saying, you know, he doesn't care about your draft status or where you've been slotted in before. If you're playing well on that night, that's where you'll be used. So, I mean, does Wheeler just become the de facto, you know, back to first or second line right wing, or is there a consideration of using him on more of a checking line plus with Adam Lowry? I mean, I'll be interested to see how that goes. We know there's been some chemistry with Pierre-Luc Dubois in the past, but, you know, anytime a team can get its captain back, they're certainly going to be excited about that, that's for sure. And we know that Wheeler will be champing at the bit to be back in the lineup. He hasn't missed a lot of time over his over his career.
So every Sunday, Ken, what I do is I have a look at every team and I have a look at their schedule and what week they have coming up. And the one team that jumps out at me more than any other team, I mean, Edmonton, because of, you know, they're facing off against the Florida Panthers and then the Calgary Flames on Saturday. But man, the Winnipeg Jets. Tuesday against Washington, Thursday against Nashville, Saturday against the Boston Bruins, Sunday against the Pittsburgh Penguins, and then next into next week, they'll face off against the Florida Panthers. This is the hardest schedule of any team in the NHL right now, I would submit. What do you think, Ken?
Hey, it's, you know, the players or the coaches hate it, but it's measuring stick time. Get out the old measuring stick, see how you're going to measure up against some of the league's best. I mean, and after that, they've got Vancouver, St. Louis, and Philly is the only sign of relief, basically, on that eight-game stretch if we want to extend it a little bit further going into the All-Star break. So, you know, I hate to say make or break, but this is a stretch that will define whether the, you know, could define whether the Jets are buyers or sellers. I mean, they've been able to ride Connor Hellebuyck. I mean, he's going to have his eighth consecutive start against Washington. He's played 28 out of 34. So, but you know that what's coming in February with nine postponed games already jammed into that month. I mean, they're going to have to get some wins from their backup. They're going to have to kind of, in a lot of ways, it sounds odd to say, Jeff, but it's a tread water situation in some ways. Like 2-2 is an acceptable outcome, right? When you're looking at the way the teams that they're going to be playing against. But you know, if it's 1-3, is it a disaster or is it just a one alarm? Or about the only thing the Jets can't do is get swept on this four game stretch. Otherwise, they'll still be right in the thick of it. And you know, I think if they can get a winner, they've played well against strong teams. You know, they've posted wins against, you know, the St. Louis Blues during the stretch. But, you know, they won 4-5 here. I mean, I know everyone looks at the recency bias and says, oh, they got blown out 7-1 against the Avalanche. Must be time to, you know, the Jets are going to start sinking. Well, that's not necessarily the case either. So it's definitely a stand up and be counted kind of week and stretch for the Jets. And how they kind of navigate these turbulent scheduling times will determine whether they're potentially going to be back above the line or being in one of those teams where they're still a bubble team. I mean, the thing going into this year with expectations, what we know, the Jets wanted to go back from bubble team to true contender, but right now they're still in that jumbled mess in the West that are the bubble teams. So that means they're going to have to either stack points or continue going on a stretch like the one they're on where they've won 4-5. Otherwise, you're going to continue to look up at teams because, as you've been talking about daily, those teams in the Pacific that we thought were maybe a little bit of fool's gold so far, they're not going away, it appears, at least certainly not as we approach the midway point. So That means it's going to be difficult. And, you know, going into the year, we expected there to be five central teams, and that still could be the case. But those teams in the Pacific have something to say about it as well. And I think it's just such a, as you've been talking about, I mean, the East teams have sort of started to find the separation, but in the West, it's still so wide open that, you know, teams like the Jets that are trying to play catch up in terms of the schedule, they're going to have to tread some water. And if they can go on a run, then they might quickly find themselves right back over that line. So certainly interesting times all around.
Yeah, they have a shot at it, but to your point, the Los Angeles Kings are playing some great hockey right now. They've won four in a row. They're second right now in the Pacific. The Anaheim Ducks under Dallas Eakins are a very much improved team. They slide into the fourth spot there, but they played 41 games. Winnipeg Jets have only played 34. San Jose's played 39. They're in the second wild card spot. Expect them to drop by percentage. Calgary's got them. Winnipeg's got them as well. The Oilers have them as well. Like, this is... Like, to me, the West is more interesting dogfight. East is all about where they're going to slot, but to me, there's a real playoff race, and there probably will be right to the very end in the West. To me, that's the conference to watch if you're watching.
For sure.
Teams sprinting to it here, by all means.
For sure. And then the other part, too, like Paul Stastny brought it up last week. I mean, you know, does any team want to play without eight players? No, but you kind of want to get your COVID crisis out of the way before the stretch run, because now, you know, you're going to be having to rely on some AHL guys. And, you know, the Jets were able to kind of survive that stretch, and they'll be back up to almost full speed. Maybe, I think, Brendan Dillon, it'll be his fifth day tomorrow, so I don't think he'll be eligible. But other than that, they've had most of their guys already run through COVID here, so I think that should be a benefit to them. But they're going to need bodies because of the number of games they're going to have to jam in here in February. And as you've also talked about, I mean, the Dallas Stars are kind of in that middle ground too. I mean, which way are they going to go with Klingberg and some of their other big decisions? Because, you know, some nights they're looking like world beaters, and other nights you wonder if they might sell, right? So, man, like you said, the West is such a fascinating place to be watching. And, you know, I think the jockeying for position is just really getting started here as we approach the midway point.
Should be fun. Ken, always a delight. You be well, my friend.
You as well. Thanks for having me, Jeff. Have a great day.
There he is, Ken Wiebe, who covers the Winnipeg Jets for Sportsnet.ca. It's going to be a tough little time here for the Winnipeg Jets. This schedule is unforgiving. Some big teams for the Jets as they hunt down a playoff spot in the Western Conference. Listen, that's it for the show. There's a lot of hockey on this afternoon and this evening. Hope you get a chance to enjoy some, if not all, of it. You know, the Minnesota Wild are facing off against the Avalanche. That comes up in just over an hour. The Kings and the Sharks, don't sleep on LA, man. Like, this is a really good and fast. When's the last time you said the Los Angeles Kings were fast? Certainly not when they were winning Stanley Cups. They may have been the slowest team in the NHL. They were straight line table hockey Kings. Possession monsters, certainly, but anything but fast. They're a quick team now. Montreal takes on the Arizona Coyotes at 4 o'clock Eastern, the Hawks and the Kraken an hour after that. And then your evening games, the Flyers and the Islanders, the Preds and the Blues. Before that game, Chris Pronger's 44 gets retired. That goes to the rafters at Enterprise. And then the Pittsburgh Penguins facing off against the Vegas Golden Knights. That may be the best game on the schedule. That may be the very best one, and it's the last game of the evening. I want to thank all of my guests for stopping by today. Ken Wiebe from Sportsnet.ca, Scott Laughlin from NHL Network Radio, Shane Doan, General Manager for Team Canada's Olympic efforts, and Elliot Friedman, who kicks off each and every program here. Thank our producer, yes, Matt Marchese, and our technical operator, Lance Kennedy. Lance, it took you 2.5 hours to get in. Good luck getting home in this storm. Back tomorrow, noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, more of the Merrick Show. Have a great day.